Move to the fourth case for today, which is Transpersonnel versus Roadway Express Incorporated. Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Jim Hansen and I represent the defendant appellant in this case, Roadway Express Incorporated. The district court in this case erred in finding that Roadway Express was a MEPA employer based on Roadway Express's obligation to reimburse Transpersonnel for Transpersonnel's actual contributions that it made to the pension fund. That was pursuant to an agreement that Transpersonnel and Roadway Express had entered into. Under the Seventh Circuit's the definition that the Seventh Circuit has adopted from the Second Circuit defining a MEPA employer, it is an obligation to contribute either as a direct employer or in the interest of an employer of the plan's participants. Roadway Express's obligation to reimburse Transpersonnel is not an obligation to contribute to a pension fund. If we look at 29 U.S.C. Section 1392, the obligation to contribute arises under a collective bargaining agreement or some type of a related agreement. We've seen in cases that have come out of this court, since Central States is a part of this circuit, we've seen a lot of cases where those related agreements are defined as participation agreements, trust agreements, the monthly certification clauses, and we have one from the 11th Circuit in Carriers Container Council in which they defined a job security program agreement as a related agreement. But the agreement between Transpersonnel, a company doing business as a driver leasing company, and Roadway Express as a motor carrier is not a related agreement to a collective bargaining agreement. The common fact that we have from the cases that have talked about who a MEPA employer is that there is a contractual obligation, first of all, and secondly, in each of those contracts, the union is a party to those agreements. And we've got some examples. The Korea shipping case is one where the MEPA employer definition first came from. There was a general cargo agreement, which was entered into by a multi-employer bargaining association, the New York Shipping Association, and the union. And Korea Shipping was a member of the association and was bound by that agreement to make contributions to the fund. Now, the fund collected those contributions from Korea Shipping through the New York Shipping Association. New York Shipping Association had no obligation itself to make the payments. It was the employer of the employees who made those payments to the association, who in turn turned them over. In H.S. Eliot, a Ninth Circuit decision, we have a general contractor who entered into an agreement with the union, and it had an obligation to make contributions for the hours worked or the work performed by its subcontractors' employees, not as a direct employer, but in the interest of an employer of the plan's participants. And then we have Carrier's Container, which the court found not only was a direct party with the union to make contributions, but also had a job security program agreement that obligated it to make contributions. In this case, Transpersonnel tries to argue that it is simply a conduit for the payment, and that is simply not what the agreement provides between Transpersonnel and Roadway. It misconstrues the facts in making that statement because it acts like it doesn't make the payment unless it gets paid by Roadway, and that is simply not the case. It had a collective bargaining agreement with Local 705, which required it to make contributions, irrespective of whether it ever got paid by Roadway Express. In addition, the agreement between Roadway Express and Transpersonnel made very clear.
Does it have that language in their collective bargaining agreement?
I'm sorry?
Does it have that language you just described that are required to make payments whether or not you pay them?
That Roadway Express make the payments?
No.
That Transpersonnel
make the payments to the fund regardless of whether Roadway pays Transpersonnel.
The facts are that the agreement with 705 required Transpersonnel to make the payments, period. There was nothing between the union and Roadway Express. There are no agreements there. And that's our...
I understand that, but you described it. They're required to make payments whether or not you pay them. That particular language was not a part of the collective bargaining agreement.
It is not part of the collective bargaining agreement. It is an independent obligation it has directly with the union.
I think we're talking at cross purposes, but you're not mentioned in the collective bargaining agreement in any way. Is that correct? That TransPersonnel had with 705?
I don't believe the collective bargaining agreement was a part of the record. There were stipulated facts that just TransPersonnel was a party and was obligated. The stipulated facts is that it had the obligation, not Roadway Express. That is a stipulated fact that under the that Roadway Express had no obligation under the collective bargaining agreement to make contributions. Roadway Express was only obligated to pay TransPersonnel for what TransPersonnel actually paid out. TransPersonnel, under its agreement, was required to pay the wages and benefits and all the other expenses, and we paid them a fee plus all of the costs in a lump sum.
How did you know what to pay them? Was this after the fact, after they'd made their payments?
Yes, they would bill us. They billed us on a weekly basis for the costs and the fee that they incurred. The case in ours is really analogous to Rheem, which involved out of the Eighth Circuit, involved a leased employee situation. We don't know exactly how they were compensated, but we do know that in Rheem, they found that the lessee of the drivers was not an employer with an agreement to, not a MEPA employer, did not have an obligation to contribute. Seaway Port Authority is also another important case, because in Seaway had the obligation to run the port and hired a managing agent. Its agreement with the managing agent, they set up a special account where Seaway would put all of the money for the cost of the wages and benefits into that account, and then the checks would be issued, a joint check would be issued by Seaway and the managing agent to the benefit fund. And the court said that because there was no contractual obligation to make contributions, there was no obligation, it was not a MEPA employer. It had no contractual obligation to contribute. And in this case, when there's no agreement obligating Roadway Express to make contributions, there's no obligation to contribute. And an obligation to reimburse is not an obligation to contribute. The three cases that they rely on all rely on the Title I definition, which has been rejected by the Second Circuit when it first defined the MEPA employer, and the MEPA employer definition of the Second Circuit has been adopted by the Seventh Circuit. And those cases, which the district court relied on, are simply in error because they do not consider the specific issue of whether there's an obligation to contribute under a collective bargaining agreement or some type of a related agreement to a collective bargaining agreement. It's for that reason that we believe that the district court erred in granting the summary judgment motion, and that decision should be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Mr. Schreiber?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The issue in this case is whether Roadway is an employer under the MEPA when it contractually obligated itself to pay for the pension fund contributions of the employees it leased from TransPersonnel. And the answer is yes, as the District Court found. Now, this Court and other circuit courts have crafted a definition of employer for purposes of the MEPA in Title IV of ERISA. That is, an employer is an entity that is a person who is obligated to contribute to a plan either as a direct employer or in the interest of an employer of the plan's participants. Now, this is the contributing obligor test, and it has two parts, either of which is sufficient to establish MEPA employer status. The first part is the direct employer prong, and that occurs when there's such an employer enters into a collective bargaining agreement with a union with an obligation to contribute to the pension fund. That's not what we have here in this case. What trans personnel is relying on is the second prong. That is, in the interest of an employer of the plan's participants prong. Now, there's no requirement under this part or prong that the contribution obligation be through a collective bargaining agreement. The cases say do not suggest that it has to be a collective bargaining agreement. Rather, the required obligation may be contained in an employee lease agreement, for example. As long as the contractual obligation exists, that satisfies the second prong. And Roadway fits neatly in the second prong. Roadway obligated itself through its lease agreement with trans personnel to contribute to the pension fund in the interest of trans personnel whose employees are plan participants. The lease agreement that they signed expressly contemplated pension fund contributions being funded by Roadway through its reimbursement to trans personnel for the contributions made on behalf of the leased employees. Roadway knew this going into the relationship. It knew from the lease agreement that there were pension fund contributions, and it knew that it was the source of funding for those contributions. It knew exactly what this money was being used for. It was going to fund the pension fund contributions.
Aren't the cases that you cite to support your position typically occur where there's a shell or a sham corporation set up by, if Roadway had created your organization?
Well, that would be a concern, Your Honor. Yes, I don't know if the cases necessarily fall in that case. And in fact, the American Stevedoring case and the other cases cited and relied upon by the district court were not shell corporations by any means. They were simply, generally speaking, leasing companies, legitimate leasing companies, who through their relationship with the lessee, had an arrangement where the lessee ultimately was the funder of the pension fund contributions. It was just for convenience or a consolidated purpose, whatever reason the lessee chose that it did not want to directly employ these employees. But the point is, we don't want to allow the purpose of MEPA, according to the court decisions, Bowers and Korea Shipping and Carriers Container Council, is to expand the scope of liability of potential employers beyond necessarily common law employers. And to do that, they look to anyone who has a contribution obligation. In this case, what the courts have held, in this case, Roadway Express had a contribution obligation through its arrangement, its employee lease with Roadway, with trans personnel. One of the policies that MEPA is trying to prevent, one of the situations MEPA is trying to prevent, as expressed by Korea Shipping and Carriers Container Council, is the very situation we have in this case, where Roadway takes, where an employer, an indirect employer like Roadway, seeks to insulate itself from withdrawal liability by contracting with a direct employer like trans personnel, including obligating itself to make the pension fund contribution payments, but then to avoid the withdrawal liability when it eventually terminates the lease. That's what MEPA, one of the scenarios MEPA was trying to prevent from occurring, and that's what Roadway is trying to use to avoid its obligations under the withdrawal liability.
Now, I understand here, though, that the fund hasn't expressed any interest of going after Roadway, have they?
Well, I don't know what the rationale for the fund's decision to go after Roadway or not go after Roadway. They've chosen, for their purposes, to go after us, trans personnel, but trans personnel feels it shouldn't share this burden alone. We're not suggesting that we have no responsibility for withdrawal liability. We are suggesting that liability is shared with Roadway Express, and that will be for the arbitrator to ultimately decide. And that's what we're simply asking, is for the opportunity to allow the arbitrator to decide what is Roadway Express's responsibility for the withdrawal liability in this case.
And Roadway Express is a unionized hauler, are they not? I mean, they have their own drivers.
They have their own drivers, yes. I don't know what their union status is.
Well, at least I got that from the briefs.
Yeah, I mean, they have their own drivers, and they treat their drivers and they treat the lease drivers virtually identically.
There was some indication that one of the reasons they terminated this was dissatisfaction of their own drivers. who belonged to a different union.
Yeah, that is correct, Your Honor. Now, you do refresh my recollection, and apparently there was a dissatisfaction with their own union as to the use of the lease drivers. So they chose to terminate the lease. But now they wanted the benefits of that lease and the benefits of employing these drivers and even willing to pay for the contributions. They're specifically agreeing to pay for the pension fund contributions, but they don't want the burden now of the withdrawal liability. Now, it's important to discuss where the contributing obligor test came from, because Roadway goes to great lengths to argue that the cases relied upon by the district court were inapposite. The contributing obligor test was drawn from Title I. That's made explicit from the Korea Shipping case, including its discussion of the district court opinions that developed, first crafted that definition or test, as well as Carrier's Container Council. And in fact, the contributing obligor test is the definition of a Title I of the employer set forth in Title I of ERISA, crafted to the MEPA context, because the MEPA is dealing with a very specific aspect of an employee benefit plan, multi-employer pension contributions and withdrawal. So it's natural that the terms wouldn't be identical. But when you put these two Title I definition up side by side with the contributing obligor definition, you see that they are really substantively one and the same. And therefore, the district court's seeking of guidance of the Title I cases was appropriate. For example, Title I defines, has two prongs. The Title I definition has two prongs, much like the contributing obligor definition. The first prong of the Title I definition says that any entity that acts as an employer, as a direct employer, is an employer. That's pretty straightforward. The contributing obligor version of the first prong, crafted to the MEPA context, says a person who is obligated to contribute to a plan as a direct employer is an employer, simply taking that direct employer definition and tweaking it to the MEPA context. Second prong, Title I says an employer is someone who acts indirectly in the interest of an employer in relation to an employee benefit plan. The contributing obligor version, again tweaked to the MEPA context, says an employer is a person who is obligated to contribute to a plan in the interest of an employer of the plan's participants. In other words, the second prong of the contributing obligor definition merely makes the second prong of the Title I definition specific to the MEPA context. It's not breaking new ground. And therefore, the district court properly applied the contributing obligor test. The district court used the contributing obligor test but properly sought guidance in its application from factually similar cases that used the Title I definition. There were no on-point cases for the district that expressly used the contributing obligor test for the court to look to. The district court recognized that the Supreme Court in Nachman held that although Title I doesn't apply automatically, it does otherwise reflect the meaning of those terms. And in fact, the term employer does properly reflect the meaning. Thus, the district court properly relied upon the various factually similar district court opinions cited in its memorandum to correctly hold Roadway as a MEPA employer. The Ream case is easily distinguishable because in Ream, there was clearly no obligation, no contractual obligation for the lessee to contribute to the pension fund. It simply paid a flat rate mileage based on an hour's work. It had nothing to do, no contemplation of pension fund contributions. COA Port Authority, similarly, by statute, was not permitted to be an employer, by state statute, and there was no specific mention of pension fund contributions in the agreement with the managing agent. Briefly, the new argument raised in appeal that Roadway is not an employer, that its termination of lease does not give the rise to MEPA liability, goes to the amount of liability. That argument is waived as it's raised for the first time in appeal and is more appropriate for the arbitrator. For these reasons, the district court should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schreiber. Mr. Hansen? Mr. Hansen, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, the difference between the Title I definition and the MEPA definition is there is no language in Title I about the obligation to contribute. The three cases that they relied on never got into the issue about the obligation to contribute and what that means. It also does not use in MEPA the issue of what indirectly means, which is in Title I. The Seaport Authority case said there were several cases that considered Title I definition, but found other cases more persuasive that said that it's a court-defined definition. The Roadway never agreed to pay pension fund contributions, despite what trans personnel continues to maintain in their briefs and here in the court today. There is nothing in any of the agreements that says that trans personnel is obligated to contribute to pension funds to the local 705 pension fund. If it had, then 705 could enforce that obligation like it is doing against trans personnel. But it has never agreed to do that. It only agreed to reimburse trans personnel for the obligations that it made at cost. That obligation cannot be enforced by the pension fund against Roadway. The obligation to contribute arises under a collective bargaining or some type of a related agreement, and there is no type of agreement like that. The employee leasing agreement is not that type of an agreement. The is not a related agreement. And MEPA was not enacted to deal with situations like this involving leased employees. I don't even think that was contemplated in anything regarding leased employees. Trans personnel was the employer of these employees for whom contributions were to be made. It made the contributions, and it is the one that is liable for those contributions. We may have an obligation pursuant to our contract to pay trans personnel a cost and a fee, but nothing else. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.